Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Where do I park if I need a car?
In a parking spot? Please don't put me in customer service. Really bad. Don't rent a car and have fucking feet. You're fine.
I'm JP, and this is another edition of Soundwaves from the Underground. We're the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. And today we are joined by Esther Moronio, editorial assistant, Jimmy Martin, resident Slug film critic, and Jeanette D. Moses, managing editor of our publication. These guys have been Sundancing ever since the festival started a few days ago, and they're ready to let us know some of their top picks and the state of indie film in general. You guys have been going to Sundance for, what's it been, 6-7 days now?
It's 8 days.
And we like to assemble writers every so often to talk about events that are really awesome, and it's really great to have people in a roundtable type setting. We get to hear everyone's different opinions. So, are you guys ready to start this, bitch?
Yeah.
But there's only one right opinion.
Is it yours?
Yeah, it is. It's weird. Well, I told Jeanette and Esther that the other day, and they were mad.
Jimmy's a Sundance diva.
Yeah, how many movies did you see this year, Jimmy?
Well, we're not done yet as we do this, and I'm at 37. I'm going to hit the big 5-0 before I'm done.
Do you guys combined even hit Jimmy's?
I'm at 16. I have some more screeners to watch, and I'm going to one more film on Saturday. So I think total I'll hit 20, which is a new high for me.
So will you hit 30, Esther?
Nope. I'm 14, and I'm done. I think that's a good number for my first time.
It's a good try. Good try.
You can't watch everything. I mean,
apparently you can. Jimmy did it.
Yeah, we're going for everything.
I have to come back and work. Okay.
All right. Hey, everyone, let's stop bickering about.
See what Park City does to you.
No,
see what
it does. Longer. You might as well get to what everyone's wondering. What are some of your favorite films of the year? Can we start and go left to right? Is there your top three? Do you have such a thing? Can you narrow it down?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I can narrow it down. I guess that my first pick would probably be Marina Abramović, The Artist is Present. It was part of the US documentary competition. That one was absolutely amazing, just like really moving and really interesting to kind of learn about this performance artist who was part of the feminist art movement back in the 70s.
Now, does someone have to know who this lady was to enjoy the documentary? Did you know before you went?
I knew a little bit about her just from seeing last year's Sundance movie, Women Art Revolution, which was about the feminist art movement, and she was one of the artists in that film. No, I don't think you need to know who she is. I think that the documentary does a really good job of giving her background in performance art and giving you information about the installation, The Artist is Present, that was displayed at the MoMA in 2009.
And Jimmy, you saw a movie that I think you liked. You listed it highly as The Imposter, right?
Yeah.
That's a documentary as well. It's a world competition doc, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah. I love a lot of the films that come out of Sundance, but there's something special about the documentaries that come out of Sundance. I think that's where they kind of hit their stride. And The Imposter, it's actually an A&E doc, so I think it's already been picked up and you can catch it. Annie will probably put it on their channel. It's about a kid who was abducted in 1997, and 3 years later his parents got a call and said that from police officials in Spain that their son was out there in Spain. The description in the book actually makes you think, like, you know, it kind of keeps a mystery of whether this is their kid or not, but spoiler alert, it's not really, like, because they tell you in the first 3 minutes, it's not. It was never the kid. And it's this guy who wanted to escape Europe and used a missing child report to get out, and because he saw the picture of the kid and said, I kind of look like him, gave him, you know, dyed his hair the same color as the kid, gave himself the same tattoos that the kid had, because he had a couple of tattoos on his hands. But the creepier part is that once he got here, he's like, there's no way they could have believed that I was their kid, so why are they hiding the fact that I'm not? Because they wouldn't let the police do DNA tests and stuff. So it's bizarre. It's way really, it's really good.
And how about its construction?
It's half one-on-one interviews, but then also it's almost shot like a film. Like it's half new dramatizations, and then, but the best part about this film, and the guy's name is I think Frederick, if I remember right, he's telling the story about how he conducted this. I mean, it's a heist, basically, the way he did this. And as the parents and the family members talk about that, you know, who they're like, you know, we didn't know why he looked a little off, and maybe he was, you know, because he was traumatized, he said that he was sexually abused, you know, maybe that's why he's not remembering things clearly. And they keep doing these little cutbacks to this guy to the guy who, you know, the imposter, and he just gives these shit-eating grins where he's just like, I totally fuck these people. And, you know, and it's like, but he doesn't say a word. It's all in his face. And you just grow to just hate this guy so much. But then when the stories turn and he's kind of like, why aren't they, you know, calling me out for what I am? Then it's kind of like, well, maybe he's bad, but maybe this family's worse. So it's really good.
And that takes place in America, right?
Yeah, it was in San Antonio, Texas.
And you saw an American doc, but Jeanette, you've chosen a different area of the world to pick your documentaries from. You enjoyed Five Broken Cameras and Law in these parts.
Yeah, those were actually both world cinema documentary competition films as well. And I agree with Jimmy. I feel like one of my favorite things at Sundance is always the documentary films. I feel like every year some of the best things that I see are in the documentary categories. Five Broken Cameras and the Law in these parts are actually, they are examining essentially the same issue, which is the conflict between Israel and Palestine, but the way that they handle the story I thought was really interesting. In Five Broken Cameras, all of the footage is shot from a guy who is living in a Palestinian village, and he gets his first camera actually when his son is born, and then Israel starts to build a wall, they want to move their settlers in, and he just begins filming everything that happens. And it's called Five Broken Cameras because obviously cameras are getting broken, they're getting smashed, they're getting shot at, and so it's very chaotic feeling. To me, in a lot of ways, it sort of honed in and put a face to all the news stories that you hear. On the flip side, The Law in These Parts was made by an Israeli filmmaker, and the interviews almost feel like an interrogation. He sits down with Jewish members of the Israeli government, essentially, the people that were actually creating the laws and enforcing the laws that have shaped sort of Palestine and Israel's relations with each other. And he's asking them about the law, how the law has changed, how they interpreted the law, certain cases. And so, I don't know, I just, seeing both of those so close to each other, I think made them both more interesting. And I think it's an interesting decision that Sundance chose to include them both in the same category.
You guys talked a lot about how important the docs are to the festival, but everyone enjoys the next category, and both Jeanette and Esther, you guys saw Sleepwalk With Me, which is the much anticipated Mike Birbiglia feature. He actually directed
Jimmy
it,
saw
didn't
it too.
He? Oh, you did?
We all sat around.
But you guys listed it as one of your favorites. We'll get to why maybe Jimmy didn't put it up on his list, but why did you guys enjoy it so much?
Well, I have always been a really big fan of Mike Birbiglia, both of his stories on This American Life, and Ira Glass is actually one of the co-writers on this project, and also his stand-up. This film was basically his stand-up done narrative style. And
based on his one-man show, Sleepwalk. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I felt like it was presented in a fresh way, and being able to see the visual and his acting skills, really, I thought that it was interpreted well as a film.
And Jeanette, what were your thoughts about it?
That is actually one I decided to go see because I love Ira Glass, his storytelling skills, and so last minute kind of rearranged my schedule so I could go check it out just because I wanted to see what it was all about, and I don't know, it's a great story. And the acting was awesome, and I really dug it. It's one of those movies that I got out of the theater and was just like, that was so good.
Now out of your, 16 or 17 each films, it ranked pretty highly. What made it stand out from all those other ones? Was it that feeling you got, Jeanette, or was it something else?
I think for me, one of the reasons that it stands out is early on, I was mostly seeing documentaries. The bulk of what I have seen is documentaries, and I think one of the reasons I typically do that is I'm not always super impressed by some of the narrative stuff, just from my past experience, and so I think that's one of the big reasons why it stood out to me, is it was just one of the first really good, more kind of narrative stories that I saw.
And Jimmy, what were your thoughts about it?
I liked it. There's a great chemistry between Lauren Ambrose and Mike Birbiglia. It felt fresh. His kind of input on it, you could tell, like, you know, like the jokes he took from his stand-up are fresh. The story itself is something I've kind of seen there, you know, been there, done that before kind of thing, where, you know, a guy's got to decide between career and family. But what's kind of funny about the character, at least for me going through it, is that he kind of becomes more of a dick. Like, you know, and you're kind of like, I don't care if you stick with this girl because to be honest, you don't deserve her. You know, and they kind of, and they acknowledge that. They really do. And they don't, you don't get your typical Hollywood ending, which I did appreciate. But it's just kind of funny. For a little bit, they are kind of pushing where you're like, you know, man, he really, you know, he cares about this girl. And you're like, yeah, but you're still kind of an asshole. Like, you know.
Are you familiar with him from This American Life at all? These guys seem.
I know a little bit, of, you know, a little bit about him. Not a lot. So.
Because he's on occasion, I believe, performed sections, if I'm not mistaken, from his one-man show on.
Yeah.
On that. Have you ever heard that before? Is there?
Yeah, and.
How did that transfer to the screen?
Well, actually, the Sleepwalk with Me, the entire premise of the film is based around one specific story that he tells on This American Life about his sleepwalking or his sleep disorder that he has that causes him to act out his dreams. And obviously that's hilarious in itself. And
I haven't seen dreams like that since Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Like, so there are dream sequences in this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
they're bizarre as hell, but they're so good.
Cool.
Yeah, it was good. And actually, I think that something that made it more special for Jeanette and I is that randomly, before we saw this film, we were in this lounge just like hanging out and taking advantage of the free cocktails and soup and stuff. And
how many times do you hear that? Free cocktails and soup.
Doesn't sound like a good combo.
The soup all had chicken in it.
Yeah. I don't think that either of us ate the soup, but the cocktails were really good. And
did you see Burr Biggs?
Yes.
Did you touch the Burr Biggs?
Burr Biggs?
No, but we got to ask him questions, and we were actually right there, like front row, as he did an interview, just kind of in a really intimate setting. And
so you guys were starstruck a little by Burr Biggs. Is that what happened?
No.
You got a Twitter page.
Okay, maybe a little bit.
I will say, watching him, because I'm familiar with Hourglass, Mike Birbiglia, knew who he was, knew the name, but didn't really know much about him other than that. And after seeing him speak in the lounge just for, I don't know, what was that, ten minutes? Just watching him kind of engage with the audience and make jokes about how no one was paying attention to him, and it was a weird atmosphere because everybody's just there with their free cocktails and their soup, and so, like, why the hell are these two dudes talking now? But just seeing that made me more excited to see it, just because I think he's good, charismatic person.
It kind of struck me that this was in the next I love the next category, because this is a category that just started like about 2 or 3 years ago, I think. And essentially, it's, you know, it's for the filmmaker who has no connections. I think it's like the foundation of what Sundance was, or what it was supposed to be. And for me, having this cast and this guy who's obviously got connections, he should have been in the spotlight category, in my opinion, because more of the people I've seen in the next ones are like college kids. And this was a very well put together.
Another actual documentary that I wanted to talk about, it's in the U.S. competition category, was The Invisible War, which is a new Kirby Dick film, which I loved. I wish I had been at the premiere of that one and not just the present industry screening. Really powerful, really well done. It's about the sexual violence that women face in the military, how rampant it is, and nothing's really being done about it. It's largely being ignored. A lot of these women, you find out through the film, the VA won't pay for medical conditions they've acquired.
To pretend it doesn't happen?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's easier that way. Does it talk about the history of women in the military and why there was some resistance?
It does.
And it features mainly women that were in the service?
It's a collection of interviews. The women's personal stories make up the backbone of the story. It's one-on-one interviews with these women. They go on about why they decided to join, what joining was like, and what is really kind of sad, I thought, is they were all so proud to serve their country. They were so excited. Many of them came from military families, and over again, you heard them talk about how they loved their job. They loved serving. And then many of them, when they came forward about the assaults that had happened, were actually pushed out of the military.
And how about the way it was constructed in terms of documentary style? How did they make the movie?
It was a combination of those one-on-one interviews that I mentioned with the women. They also had interviews with tons of like higher up officials in the military.
Are they all sticking to the party line?
What
pretty
was
much
that?
The military?
It's kind of mixed in there. I can't remember the woman's name off the top of my head now, but there is a woman who is interviewed who was in charge of training that they gave to soldiers coming in when all these cases started coming up. And her part's just a joke. Like, they ask her a question and every single answer is, I'm not qualified to answer that. Like, I'm not qualified. But they also, one interesting thing that Kirby Dick did with the footage is they actually purchased very inexpensive camcorders and gave them to all of the subjects to film their life, just day in the life of what it's like to be them. And some of the most interesting footage, I think, was revealed through that. One of the main characters, you see just all this video of her calling the VA, trying to get her case covered, going to the doctors, them not listening to her. It was really well done. It was a good film.
And I believe that does it for all the docs you guys cited, right, Jimmy?
No, mine was my favorite of actually of all the ones I've seen. I think the one I'm putting at the top is Indie Game.
And that was a doc as well?
It's a doc, yeah. It's about the independent gaming development community. And
like open source?
There was never really a market for independent gaming, you know, like where there's just two guys in a room making games. You know, when you got games like Modern Warfare 3 and you've got games like Grand Theft Auto, you've got about 1,000 people working on that game for about 5 years. Whereas in independent gaming, you've got about two guys sitting in an office working for about 2 to 3 years. And by no means are the games anywhere comparable. I mean, but what's great about these kind of games is that they're personal. They're, you know, they're given a message. It's something, you know, about them, about their, you know, childhood, about their, you know, interests, and they can put it into a game form, and they don't have to deal with Microsoft getting down their throat, Nintendo getting down their throat. But until about 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, independent gaming was very limited because gaming companies didn't see a market in it because there was no digital download. But now with like Xbox Live and PlayStation Store and the Wii market and all that, you can now buy these games. These companies can buy it from these independent gamers, give them a certain percentage, and then put it online and people can buy it for $5. And so this whole documentary follows about the main stars is two guys named Edmund and Tommy, who are making a game called Super Meat Boy. And they've made a few games in their past, but nothing like this, and it's really hyped up. And then like there's a scene where it kind of got leaked, one of their demos got leaked, and it started ended up on Metacritic, and they had a 92 out of 100 score. This is about a week before they're about to go, you know, to launch it, which is unheard of. And so now they're freaking out, like, what if it doesn't live up to its potential? And on the other side, you got a guy named Phil Fish, who won an award in 2008 for a game. It was the game idea called Fez, and he's still developing it, and this is now 2011, and now going into 2012. These characters, I mean, the guy Tommy on Super Meat Boy is a neurotic. Like, he just, like, is so scared that it's gonna fail, and, like, you know, and just watching him crumble to pieces, where Phil Fish is the most self-destructive person I've ever seen on screen before in my entire life. And he said he's completed the game 4 times and wasn't happy with it, so he deleted it and started again. And so people are waiting for this game to come out. And most people are like, I think you fucking missed the window, buddy. Like, the ship sailed and you should have came out with your game forever ago. And then he's already in a lawsuit with his ex-partner who got tired of him. And basically, if his partner doesn't sign a contract in this documentary, he can't even release the game anymore or be on convention floors like E3 or, you know, gaming conventions. And they ask him, they say, what are you going to do if he doesn't sign? And he just looks at the camera and says, I'm going to kill myself. And you wholeheartedly believe he'll do it. And watching him on camera with that scene, and then he has an absolute meltdown in a hotel lobby. It's connected to the gaming convention because the ex-partner still hasn't signed a contract, and now they're down to 8 hours before the doors open. And it's the most gripping, and that's what I love about it, because like, I love like war documentaries too, like those are great, but like this is like something you know about a little bit, and it's not maybe going to be the end of the world if he doesn't make his game kind of thing, but it's, I mean, they make it that important.
It's
they
that
make,
dramatic.
Yeah, you're on the edge of your seat, literally, going, holy shit, this guy is... This is going to be a dead man if he doesn't get his game out. And it's amazing. It's really good.
Just to round out your top few picks, I'm looking here at Excision, Jeanette, which was from the Midnight screening series. Had a really compelling main character, apparently, Pauline. One of the best teen characters in movies this decade.
I think part of why I liked Excision so much is I went to the premiere at Midnight, opening night. So that already has a good buzz around it. People are excited to see the film. I also loved all the cameos in it. There's a John Waters cameo. John Waters plays a reverend. It's really fucked up, but it's really well done, so it's okay that it's so fucked up. It would be a good Broovies movie, I think.
Now, how is
I think
the
throw up?
What?
I think you'd throw up at Broovies in that movie.
Really?
Oh, hell yeah.
Well, oh, it's not that bad.
The picture looks pretty bad.
Well,
Is she having sex with a corpse?
No, it's about a teenager that's obsessed. She's just weird. Like, everybody knew that weird kid that was sort of like greasy, and you just looked at him and you're like, are you a fucking like serial killer? Like, who the hell are you? Why aren't you washing your face? She's kind of like that character, and she has these weird sexual fantasies that involve surgery, and nobody likes her. Her parents don't even really like her, but her little sister, who has cystic fibrosis, is kind of the only person in the film that sort of feels for her. It's really well done. It's a really well done, fucked up film.
I heard that lead actress did a really good job.
Yes.
A good performance.
The lead actress, her name is Annalyn McCord, and usually, in person, she's really attractive. She plays tons of roles as, like, sex pots and, like, hot girls, and so it was really fun to see her play this terribly awkward, just, like, the kind of person that you walk in the room with, and you're just like, ugh. Like, what the hell is your problem? She also has really bad acne in it.
That's one of the reasons it's compelling, or? Jimmy, you saw this movie as well, and nausea-inducing, apparently.
The day I saw it was the seventh movie of the day that I had seen, and so I was kind of losing my mind to begin with, and
it just pushed you over the edge?
Oh, Jesus. It's disturbing, to say the least, and the psychosexual nightmares, or hers are dreams, they're nightmares to me. But I will say, like, it's funny because in these dreams the girl is absolutely gorgeous, and then they cut to and she just looks like absolute hell. So, but it's fun. Tracy Lords actually plays her mom, which is fun, and there are some great performances in it. But it's the way it ends. Right when it ended, I was
yeah,
done.
The ending.
I was like, I'm out. I'm going to bed. Jimmy's done.
Definitely so. Recommendable though.
I would recommend it. Late night movie though. See it at Brewby's. See it somewhere where you can get a little intoxicated first. Don't see it if you don't like blood.
There's some violence in that movie. There's also violence in one of those that you picked, Jimmy.
At least
it's getting a rave reviews for its ultra violence. The Raid.
The Raid
was one of your top.
This is probably like I love. Okay. I keep telling people, if you have testicles, you have to see it. And if you're a girl, go see it anyway. It's probably the most simple story you can imagine. It's a SWAT team going to a 30-story building. Drug dealer lives on top. And they just say, we're going in and we're taking them out. That's it.
I've seen that movie tons of times.
Oh, yeah, me too. What I haven't seen before is the fucked up, most beautiful choreography I've seen in a martial arts film in a long time. And I knew I was in for a trip when not only does this guy get his fucking ass kicked in the first 5 minutes, he drops to the ground. The SWAT, the guy's a rookie. I mean, obviously, he's like, oh, new on the job. And so he takes this guy, you know, one of these drug dealers down, you know, kicks him 1,000 times. And while he's on the ground, pulls out like a 9mm and shoots him in the head 3 times and keeps going. And then, you know, bashes a guy's skull into the wall. Not once, but 4 times. And that's level one, you know, and then you have 30 more floors to go up. It's as simple as it gets, but, you know, most press screens, and that's where we usually see these films, they're very dour. They're very, you know, no one really wants to laugh unless it's like, you know, appropriate. Like, you almost have to have like one person laugh to make it like, oh, we can laugh in here because we're amongst professionals. My press screening, people were going absolutely ape shit, and that's what blew me away. And I'm actually, you know, as we record this, I'm gonna go see it tomorrow night at a midnight screening in Salt Lake, because I think a public screening would even go more crazy than a press screening. I can't wait to see it again. I think if I heard right, it comes out in March. Sony Pictures Classics already picked it up. March is when it kind of probably goes like New York and whatnot. So Salt Lake wise, it'll probably hit. I'm guessing June, somewhere around there.
June.
So for the love of God, go see The Raid.
And it's exhausting.
And it's an Indonesian like martial arts film. That's what's even better. And the guy who directed his name's Gareth Evans, who's not Indonesian, but his wife is, and they moved to Indonesia. And he just said, I never left, but I'm going to make a martial arts film.
Wait, I heard about this guy.
Yeah.
He's a big follower of the martial art crowd and cinema genre, if I'm
he
not mistaken. And his wife helps bankroll the movie sometimes? Is that true?
I'm not sure about that.
Look that up.
I can neither confirm nor deny the allegation.
You are not qualified to answer that question.
These are all erroneous. Sorry about that. Something I know for sure, though, Estera, you caught Where Do We Go Down as one of your favorites. Will you tell us about that?
Yeah, obviously I have very different movie tastes than Jeanette and Jimmy, because all of my favorite films are the sentimental ones.
I noticed you put Wuthering Heights on here, but on purpose I'm not asking you about that. But that's
that
just case in point.
Oh, that was great. That's
we'll
nothing
just skim
like
over that.
You expected.
We don't need to bring up the Brontes
fine.
Here.
Fine. Let's just talk. No, fine. Let's talk about Wuthering Heights right now.
Jesus.
Let's talk about it.
Okay, that's your one?
Fine.
Okay.
Yes, let's do Wuthering Heights.
Take a guy like me. Not a big fan of the Bronte sisters. Tell
no,
me why this is worth
saying. Completely understand.
Thank
but
you.
Have you actually read Wuthering Heights?
Of course.
Okay, so you know how dark and how like fucked up it is, right? Because I think that
that's
Wuthering Heights...
That's not what they use in English class, but yeah.
No, but Wuthering Heights is probably the film that I picked that relates the most to the films that these two picked. because even though it doesn't have crazy surgery or like
excessive violence,
9mm, it's definitely got a lot of violence, but it's the kind of like emotional, like abusive, physical, like family type violence.
The good old fashioned kind of violence.
Yeah, the good old fashioned type of violence. I watched this because I actually am a fan, obviously, of Emily Bronte.
It's obvious now. I didn't know.
Yes, and I read Wuthering Heights when I was a teenager, but I went to it expecting it to be just like your regular UK period film where it's just,
that's what I'm
imagining. Like Colin Firth is there and
don't forget Keira Knightley. She always
shows up. Yeah. No period films with Keira Knightley are any good. But, you know, something like that, where it's going to be, like, really sentimental and romantic and Victorian. But actually, this film was amazing because, first of all, the way that it was shot was, I think that in my review I wrote about it as Planet Earth on crack or something like that, because it just zooms in on the nature and the wildlife of the moors, which are a really huge motif in Wuthering Heights, the novel. And it brings it to life in a completely different way. It has no soundtrack. The film has no music behind it. And they actually brought in this French sound editor. The sound editing in this film is really what made it, aside from the landscape shots. And I know this sounds really dull to you guys, but just being able to hear...
What was that? What did you say? I just dozed off a few minutes ago. Something about moors.
I thought it was so beautiful, and you get to hear everything so clearly. Like, every sound is exaggerated. The wind, just the violence of nature was just so beautiful and made this film so dark. And the love story is so complicated. Like, it's not your regular, you know, Sense and Sensibility, Pride and Prejudice type story.
There's actually some a new spin that this director chose. They cast a person of African descent as Heathcliff.
Yes, Heathcliff is black.
There you go, you said it.
Yes, okay. And that's taking a lot of liberties with the script and with the novel. He's kind of he's an outcast. Heathcliff's character is definitely an outcast. And so I think that her choice to cast it as make it a race issue was definitely really interesting and brought another perspective to this great story that was really different from anything that I've ever seen done with a period film like this.
You know what? In all seriousness, I give you 50% chance I'll see that based on your review. So you're welcome. You've done it. You convinced me.
I guarantee you that, especially in the kids that play the characters in the first half are first-time actors, and they were amazing. And there isn't even much dialogue, but just the chemistry that they had with each other and their expressions and everything was just
well acted,
perfect.
Well
yeah,
done. The performance is good. You also have a few other picks that we don't have time to talk about right now. Where Do We Go Now? Another Spotlight film and the U.S. dramatic film Safety Not Guaranteed. People, of course, can read those reviews at slugmag.com. We're going to talk about events here of this upcoming week like we usually do with our podcast, but unfortunately we're going to lose Jimmy.
Sorry.
It's okay, you've got another movie to see.
I've got more movies to do.
Where are you going right now?
The Broadway.
Which film?
Pursuit of Loneliness, yeah. Which is the next category. See, I like the next categories, so we'll see.
Except for Kid Thing.
Except for Kid Thing. Yeah, Kid Thing set.
Thanks for joining us, Jimmy.
Thanks, man, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And you guys have a wonderful night.
Are you ready for another edition of our event section, Esther?
Always.
Thank you for doing this again, once again. The magic that is this event section. We start off the week with Friday, February 3rd's biggest event.
You can pick up the new issue of Slug anyplace cool.
Admittedly, we're a little biased about how awesome we think that event is, but the February issue is going to be pretty badass, I hear.
I think the public would agree.
I agree with the public. And the day after that, Saturday, February 4th, I'm actually maybe going to go to this.
I'm going to go to it for sure.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Beethoven's Fifth Symphony at Abravanel Hall, and there's going to be an after party at Jay Wong's Bistro.
Yeah, this is the famous dun-dun-dun-dun.
What's after that?
Dun-dun-dun-dun.
I did not expect a musical rendition. Thanks. Just still blown away by that.
I grew up on classical music. I can sing a lot of it.
You sing a lot of the notes?
I can hum to it.
You can hum the melody? Actually, classical music helps increase your brain function, so
that's fine.
That's what I was going to say. I was about to say that. You, oh my God, you even read minds with your symphony powers.
I do. It's Mozart.
Let's highlight another Craft Lake City Artist Workshop event with Holly Jones of Say Hello.
Yeah, it's part of the Craft Lake City Artist Workshop series. It's really awesome because you actually get to go hang out with a Craft Lake City alum, and or they teach you how to make their craft. And Holly Jones is going to be teaching us how to make cardboard chandeliers to decorate your romantic Valentine's dinner.
And I like how you tied that in. I fucking forgot Valentine's was that month.
That's okay. I don't celebrate Valentine's. But
I've seen these before. They look cool. Are they good enough to be a gift for Valentine's Day? Could you give them to a significant other?
I think so. I mean,
yeah, the answer is yes.
Yes. Yes. Definitely.
And the first five people to get there are going to be able to build their chandeliers for free. Mm-hmm. Everyone else needs to bring $5 for the cost, because there is some electrical equipment that goes into that.
Electrical? I don't know about electrical.
Some wires and lights.
There are some simple crafting supplies.
Wait, is this a candelabra or is this a lit up chandelier? Because those are two different things. It says chandelier on this sheet.
No, it's a chandelier, but it's not going to light up unless you add lights to it. You'll see. Just come out or look up Holly Jones, the company that she works for, or her crafting project is called Say Hello, and it's going to be at the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art, which used to be the Salt Lake Art Center.
It's right next to the Salt Palace. Mm-hmm. And coincidentally enough, Abravanel Hall, where the symphony is going to be that weekend. It's going to be a great 3 or 4 days for art, it sounds like.
Yeah.
You're going to be all arted up, whatever that means.
I know. Just really cultured.
You're doing that, right? You're building a chandelier?
Oh, I'm definitely going to do that. Yeah.
I'm thinking about it as well. I'm going to give it to somebody and put lights on it after.
That sounds jovial. I don't know. Romantic? Jovial? I don't know.
Jovial? You what? I don't even know what the fuck. You've seen too many movies. I haven't lights. Seen enough. I don't know what the hell is going on here. Lights. Jovial lights.
Yes.
Thank you, Asa.
You're welcome.
As usual, we encourage everyone to check out our free app. It's available for your iPhone. You can stream us now on that. You can call us with the click of a button for access to our voicemail line. Mm-hmm. It's got everything you need about Slug, including this daily calendar, which we just talked about. You can access it on your phone. Hey, thanks again, Esther.
Hey, you're welcome.
It's time to continue on our Sundance panel today. Still joined by Esther and Jeanette. Thanks, guys, for sticking around. I know you have movies to see as well, so we'll kind of keep this brief. What was the overall experience for you ladies this year? And it's not your first time up there, is there, is it?
Yeah, this was actually my first time, and it wasn't.
You've done
amazing.
There before, maybe like spotty every once in a while, but this is your first time like diving in, right?
No, this was actually my first
your
time.
Your first time?
Going to Sundance and watching films. Yeah. First time ever, and so...
Well, congratulations.
Thank
How
you.
Was the first year, then?
It was great. I wasn't quite sure what to expect. I mean, obviously, got a lot of tips from Jeanette and Jimmy. I was kind of nervous, but once we got up there, I kind of followed Jeanette around a bit, and she showed me, like, how to use a bus and where to go for the press screenings and kind of how everything worked. And once I just started doing it, you know, it just became second nature, and I just got in the swing of things and it all flowed really well.
How long did Jeanette let you hang around her before she was like, "We gotta go"? Cramping my style.
Actually, we rode up there together and then parted ways right away.
There you go.
But she did...
Movie.
Yeah. Oh, you had different movies?
We did. So I kind of hit up the lounges because I didn't have movies until later and found my way back to the theater. But we did all hang out that night and go party, do the whole Sundance party on Main Street thing.
Which is sometimes part of the experience to people.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome because, you know, living down here in Salt Lake and having to abide by the regular Utah liquor laws, it was really refreshing to go up there and go to these private parties where, you know, you get to have free drinks and free pour cocktails and things like that. Not that I'm an alcoholic or anything.
You don't have to say that. Once you say that, actually, I give you shit about it. Not that you're an alcoholic or anything, but which was your favorite party? Never mind. I'm just messing around. And Jeanette, what was your experience like this year? This must be like your fifth or sixth
third year.
Right?
Third year covering it.
Sorry, I keep overestimating. I forgot you guys.
I'm not that old, JP.
Oh, shit.
Not that old. Yeah, third year covering it. I don't know. I mean, it's Sundance. It's good. You get up there. You don't sleep enough. You don't eat enough. you drink too much and you see movies. I mean, Jimmy is kind of the craziest. Yesterday, I think he said he saw 7 movies. I try to do 2 or 3 each day. And so it's fun. You get to see a lot of good stuff. Occasionally you see some not so good stuff. You eat lots of sushi from the Fresh Market right next door, because the sushi restaurant that was by the theater closed, which was unfortunate. I don't know, I mean, the biggest thing with Sundance is prepare to be sort of malnourished, prepare to not get enough sleep, and prepare to just watch movie after movie.
And prepare for weather.
Is that a trick you learned this time? It's weather up there, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, that big snowstorm happened on Saturday where it didn't stop snowing the entire day. That was kind of shitty, because like Jeanette's car got completely buried. It took her like 5 hours to get from Main Street to Jeremy Ranch where we were staying. That part wasn't fun, but so I guess it's true.
But not fun stuff happens, or maybe you see a bad movie and then you get over it. And you're like, well, there's something else that's gonna go on. Something else will happen.
As you're saying though, part of the experience is the unexpected, and that adds to it. Every year I try to go up to Park City to watch movies when I can make it through the crowds and all the weather and shit. It's something interesting that grabs you. But this year, like other years, is full of great movies. Is there anything that kind of stood out to you though, Jeanette, in terms of the state of indie film based on what you saw this year? Is it pretty much strong and vital? Is it going?
I would say it's strong and vital. A weird part of me every year when I go to Sundance, from the really good films that I see, I just find myself very inspired by the entire thing. Like, I'll see these great documentaries and it's just like, wow, that's so amazing. Like, I want to make a documentary someday, maybe. Like, wow, how cool. You do interviews all day long with people and then you edit the footage. And so I don't know. I would say the state of indie film, it's good. A lot of good movies. And hopefully lots of them get picked up so the general public can see them.
And from what you saw, Esther, I'm really interested because this is your first year being involved with the film festivals. How does it compare to regular movies that you've seen in theaters, maybe even indie movies? How is the indie crowd a little bit different than what you see down at the Megaplex?
Like, I've always been a pretty big film buff. I've worked at a movie theater basically since I was 16. I still work at a movie theater of sorts. Yeah, I would definitely agree with Jeanette that it's healthy, and, you know, seeing these films, like, I also agree that the documentaries are definitely the strength of Sundance, and I feel like the ones that I saw are leaning towards inspiration. Like, Jeanette said that they want to incite change in the world, and I think that that's really awesome, because I did feel inspired by these films, like Marina Abramovich, and I didn't get to talk about this one, but Chasing Ice, which is a documentary about global warming and the glaciers that are disappearing. Both of these documentaries just really moved me, and like, I didn't necessarily feel like I want to make a documentary. That's not
or
something.
I might just be twisted, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't feel the need to be a filmmaker, but I definitely did feel like I want to contribute to these causes in some way, whether it's by using my skills as a writer or just letting other people know about these films and helping them get more viewers.
That's good then. Sundance is doing, I believe, what it originally set out to do, as evidenced by you, a first-timer. It's making people think differently about the world and showing them a different perspective, mm-hmm. which is what's always great about film festivals. I saw The Queen of Versailles, which was a great documentary, and I also saw Bones Brigade, an autobiography. You were there as well, Jeanette.
I was there.
And we haven't really touched on this yet, but the Sundance Film Festival gives you access to filmmakers and characters and movies in a way that other experiences don't, like the Megaplex experience, for instance. You're never going to get a Q&A with an artist there. And both you and I were at a Q&A the other day. Bones Brigade was really exciting. I don't know. I love it because I've been using Bones bearings for years and was always fascinated with the beginning of skateboarding. Can you talk a little bit about how it is being able to interact with filmmakers, and then maybe what you thought that is represented through that Bones Brigade FAQ we saw?
I think being able to have the filmmaker there and ask a question, it adds a lot to the experience. I believe, like, for example, The Excision, which I saw at midnight, there was a Q&A afterwards, and so the audience got to ask their questions to the director, and the entire cast is standing there, and it's almost like your own personal interview. the Stacy Peralta film, I think a lot of audience members who grew up skating, I mean, during that Q&A, there was tons of people who stood up not to ask a question, which always annoys me, but...
Yeah, I saw you tweeting about that.
Just to say, like, oh, man, I love you, which that's fine if you want to tell the filmmaker how much you love them. But what I always like about the Q&As is it gives you a chance right there to fill in any holes, to ask them why they chose to do things a certain way, why they chose to exclude certain information. And I think just those Q&A sessions can add a lot of interesting insight that you wouldn't get from just watching the film.
I agree with that somewhat. I saw two Q&As, one for the film Goats. I went to the premiere of that. That Q&A seemed really superficial to me. It was a lot of like big name Hollywood actors that were up there, and they didn't seem very excited to be there, for one thing, and secondly, they didn't really seem to know that much about their film, really, or their characters. Like, some of the questions that the audience was asking, they had a hard time answering, which is surprising to me, because I feel like if you're spending so much time working on something, you've got to really think it out. But for the Chasing Ice Q&A, that was here in Salt Lake at the public library, and maybe it was also a combination of the audience that goes to these films as well, but the Q&A for that was great. The photographer, James Bolo, who that film is kind of based around, he is an activist, and he had a lot of really great things to say, and you can tell that everyone up there was really, really passionate about their cause and about this film, and that the audience had really been moved by the information that was presented.
I think also it can, kind of how you were saying, at one of the Q&As you went to, everyone, they didn't look excited to be up there. The Bones Brigade Q&A was really fun because you've just spent all this time watching they're old men now. These old men who grew up skateboarding, were professional before they were even 18 in a lot of cases. You've just watched them give these really intimate, emotional interviews about skating and their life and Stacy's influence on their life. And then to get all of them up on stage as adults they were beaming. They were so happy to be there. They were so happy to answer the questions from the audience.
Yeah, you could tell they're passionate in the movie, and that definitely transferred to them being on stage and finally getting some public accolades, you know? I think that was really awesome seeing those guys, which is what's great about the documentary competitions, because you can see these real people there after you see the story, and it makes it all more exciting, which I think is probably the best thing about Sundance. If you can access that, unless you're getting a whole bunch of Hollywood assholes.
Yeah.
Sounds like you ran into this
thing. Just in that one premiere.
Well, you should catch some more next year, some more Q&As. Maybe it'll change your mind a little bit, hopefully. I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, I definitely plan on filling my schedule with more documentaries next year.
Hey, thanks, Esther. I guess we should mention that your last name is Maronio, if we haven't already. And that you're an editorial assistant and a first-timer at Sundance. It was really great to have your views on that. And thank you, Jeanette D. Moses, managing editor of Slug. Thanks for slugging it out another year for us up in Park City. Did I say slugging it out?
You did.
That's a pun or a joke? Oh, that's great.
You did just say that.
And for more coverage, you can go to slugmag.com. We've got all the reviews up. We have about, 50 by the end of this week, and they'll accumulate and trickle in over the weekend. So everything you need to know about Sundance, we've got on our website. And thanks again to Jimmy. He is out there doing what you guys should be doing, reviewing, seeing movies. Are you going to go see some movies tonight?
I have a film that I'm going to see on Saturday night, About Face. Jimmy actually saw it earlier in the week, but that is one I was really excited about. It is interviews with supermodels talking, and it was directed by some portrait photographer. My understanding of the film is that it's these women who have defined beauty for decades now talking about what it means and sort of, I think, their life story with being a supermodel.
I look forward to reading your review online then. And Esther, do you still have a few more?
Oh, I am Sundanced out.
You gonna dance yourself in your bed and take a nap?
Yes, I still have some reviews to catch up on, so that's what I have to look forward to.
Well, thanks again, guys. Just a few more days and then you can take a break.
Ooh.
Thanks for listening to Sound Waves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, please visit slugmag.com. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or any thought about the show, feel free to email us at soundwaves@slugmag.com. You can tweet us on our Twitter page, or you can call us at 858-233-9324. That's a voicemail line that's available 24 hours a day. We love getting your feedback. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine, and it's produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art design by T. Doan, and technical design by Kate O'Connor. Next week, we'll be featuring a slam dance recap, learning more about the Writers Project, and finding out the best places in town to get chocolate with Yelp's Jeffrey Stedman.